Show. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Minute past the hour, and we begin a new week of broadcasting and a new month of broadcasting here on the Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. That's where you'll find access to the chat room. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com/chatroom. You'll also find the Listen Live button there, which you can use if you're by a PC or a laptop. If you're out and about, however, or you want to listen on a mobile device, we recommend apps from either TuneIn or Stitcher. They're both quite good indeed. Also there, you will find the PayPal button. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com PayPal button is the only means by which we keep this all on the air. It is listener-driven, listener-supported, listener-content-based, listener-focused, listener-everything. And we try to raise $150 on any given evening, but you know that. So this evening is like any other, and we're trying to raise $150. So there's that. By way of letting you know, Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge is on the table this evening. Shirley is offering up $150 if our goal is met, thereby doubling it and hopefully building a little bit of a cushion for the lean days. We have those, you know. But, yes, Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge is on the table. And if you prefer PayPal, that's fine. If you prefer to use the traditional mail address, that works equally well. Just shoot me a note so I can tell Boss Man Wayne that he doesn't have to put on his spider-proof gloves when he reaches into the otherwise echoey mailbox. It echoes a bit from time to time. Let's see. Oh, yes. It is a new week. It's a new month. And new weeks begin with what? Yeah, Monday. And it's been a busy weekend. And the thing is, I start thinking about Moran Monday on Saturday because I know that there's a good chance that we will have any number of nominees before even Sunday arrives. So we'll call this the post-Super Bowl Moran Monday competition. And I got to tell you, the competition is fierce. Absolutely fierce. I thought I had it. I got an internet from Isaac earlier today, and I thought he'd nailed it. I thought it was just, you know, boom, right there. But not so much. Still pretty doggone good, though. So let's crank up the Calliope. There's that Calliope.
Hurry, hurry, hurry. Step right up, step right up. You will not believe your ears. It's Moran Monday on the Horn. Morans of all shapes and sizes. Morans abound. Right-wing morans. Teabagging morans. Capitalistic morans. Religious morans. Morans oh plenty from the right wing on this here Moran Monday on the Horn. You can't tell the morans without a program, and this is the program that tells the morans. You can't tell them much. Yes, indeed. Behind this thin cybernetic veil of canvas, you will hear morans that defy description. morons, who are kind of grabby, so hang on to your purses. Head for the hills, or you'll be up to your armpits in morons.
Post-Super Bowl edition. Yeah. Now, like I said, I thought Isaac had it nailed, so we will we'll start with this, because it's just it's too good to pass by. This is a video posted, or this is audio from a video that was posted last week. They make a big deal out of noting that this was posted on Friday, January 31st, 2014. Hot diggity, right? Yeah. Oops, I thought I turned off the Calliope machine. I guess I forgot. All right, much better. Still didn't turn off. Okay, that's interesting. Just a minute, I have to turn off the Calliope machine. Here we go. And go away. Now the Calliope machine is gone. Very good, very good. Now, anyway, so I've never heard of this guy before. He is, of course, an internet preacher. Yeah, I know, it's a little bit ahead of Prayer Meeting Wednesday, but this is the post-Super Bowl edition of Moran Monday, remember. So here we go.
This is your friend, David E. Taylor.
Date recorded Friday, January 31st.
To someone near me, it was shown to me that the Broncos are going to win this 2014 Super Bowl, February the 2nd. Now, the reason why I come to you on this camera is because I like to tell you about events before they take place, and especially to help you understand that when you see dreams in your sleep, it don't just have to be me. It can be anybody around you that God is forecasting the future. I like that, forecasting the future. So one of the future forecasts in the next few days is that the Broncos are going to win this Super Bowl that is about to take place against the Seattle Hawks or the Seahawks. I'm not abreast up on football. I'm not aware of a lot of things that go on there, but because sports is so huge to human beings in America, I believe God is also trying to show them that he knows the forecast of the future in every arena of life. And so to all the football fans out there, to all you football players, I'm just letting you know that the Broncos are going to win this Super Bowl coming up this Sunday. Another detail that was given in another dream to another person around me is that the score was 24-21. Now, I'm not sure how accurate those details are. I'm just stating.
Time out. I'm throwing the red flag. Wait a minute. And I will not be charged a timeout for this. So the Broncos, this is Friday, January 31st, 2014. God has delivered a message that the Broncos are going to win. And not only are they going to win, but they're going to win 24-21. Now, maybe I'm wrong, but that sounds pretty darn specific. No? Yeah. But with all that specificity, then you get this.
Around me is that the score was 24-21. Now, I'm not sure how accurate those details are.
He's not sure how accurate. Either God's forecasting or God isn't forecasting. Personally, I think, if anything, God was on the side of the bookies. Wow. So, what's the takeaway here? That God uses Super Bowl Sunday to chump the faithful? or that this guy's bookie is his God. I'm not sure which.
Just stating them. Again, I didn't have these dreams. People around me had them. And I understand by the Spirit the interpretation of these dreams.
Okay, so he's not so sure about the specifics, but the Spirit has given him the interpretation. And the interpretation is that the Broncos are... Why did they even bother playing the game?
And I know them to be true, especially the one that the Broncos are going to win, the Super Bowl. Now, the score that is going to be 24-21, I don't know. I can't tell you if that's accurate or not, but someone dreamed the score would be 24-21. But I haven't got a witness in my spirit from the Holy Spirit that that is true. But the first dream that I got, the Holy Spirit has brought witness to me that the Broncos will win this Super Bowl.
I don't know what to make of it. You can't lay it all on Peyton Manning. I mean, the fact of the matter is, Seattle was just awesome. Poor Peyton, you know, who can be timed with a stop sundial. I personally think he re-injured his neck when he saw that when that first snap went by his head. But maybe God just doesn't get it. But that's just the tip of the post-Super Bowl Moran Monday stupidity. Yes. Oh, for heaven's sakes, yes. You know by now that it turned out whoever that anonymous Twitter was that Fox News called to have disemboweled, drawn, quartered, and scattered to the four corners of the realm, who tweeted that bigots in the right wing would have a hissy over the Cheerios commercial. Well, that was kind of a giveaway, because that meant that the right wing knew better than to have a hissy over the Cheerios commercial, you know, with the biracial couple. But bait is bait. And, well, I think what's his name? Phil Griffin over at MSNBC can now retract his apology for that anonymous tweet from MSNBC about how the right-wing racist bigots would give all, because they walked past the trap of the Cheerios commercial and stumbled right into the pit that was the Coca-Cola ad. And they stumbled spectacularly into it. You know the ad, right? My personal favorite ad was the Volkswagen ad with the angel wings. And I thought that was just terribly cute. But the Coke ad featured a multicultural angle. It was... Coca-Cola is an inherently evil company. We know that. All you have to do is Google Coca-Cola, water, India, Coca-Cola, water, South America. You know, one or the other of those, you'll get the idea. But anyway, the whole thing, you know, Super Bowl ads are not about selling product usually. Super Bowl ads are about creating buzz and awareness and getting people talking. And that's why, for instance, the puppy horse ad for Budweiser. You know, massive warm fuzzies. The Dober Wawa from Audi certainly did not say anything about the relative merits of an Audi over anything else. But they got people's attention. So along comes Coca-Cola going for the warm fuzzy with a rendition of America the Beautiful that was performed in a number of languages, the majority of which were not English. They get moving. The right wingers do. I mean, they mobilize lickety split. Maybe one of the best was the hissy had by Bad Urkel, otherwise known as Alan West. Yeah, this was precious. I'm watching the Super Bowl. Looks like good defense Seattle is trouncing good offense Denver when a Coca-Cola commercial came on, and it started rather patriotically with the words of America the Beautiful. Then the words went from English to languages I didn't recognize. Now, I know the politically correct thing is to foster multiculturalism, working really well in Europe, but we should remember the words spoken by President Teddy Roosevelt. And it's every immigrant who comes here should be required within 5 years to learn English or leave the country. Yada, 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 yada. I am quite sure there may be some who appreciated the commercial, but Coca-Cola missed the mark, in my opinion. If we cannot be proud enough as a country to sing America the Beautiful in English in a commercial during the Super Bowl by a company as American as they come, doggone. No, he really does. He says doggone. Doggone, we are on the road to perdition. This was a truly disturbing commercial for me. What say you? And it was on. Because America is such a weak, pissant nation that we cannot tolerate more than one language, even though this language was, well, I mean, we really don't know what the first language spoken on this continent was, but we know it was not a European language. But it didn't come from the Indo-European language family group tree. The first European language spoken on this continent was likely one of the Scandinavian tongues. And then a few hundred years later, you get Spanish and Portuguese and maybe Italian, because remember, Christopher Columbus was Italian, not Spanish. So that probably Italian may have been the second language spoken on the... Yeah. But the third, rather rapidly, was obviously Spanish. And then what? French? Dutch? How long does it take? But well, it's I guess what the lost colony of the Sir Walter Raleigh plant, that would be the first English, I guess. But doggone, we are on the road to perdition. If I could do a decent Barney Fife, that's what you'd have to do that in. Road to Perdition. Because somebody dared sing America the Beautiful in Spanish or some other language. Several other languages. Oh dear, oh dear, oh dear. Asa with a query. I wonder if this moron realizes that Coca-Cola does more business outside of the U.S. than it does inside. No, that's probably a little too thinky for the likes of Alan West. He doesn't cogitate much past deciding whether or not to pistol whip a prisoner of war who's bound and immobilized in front of him. But Alan West got going, and well, the knuckle walkers followed in spectacular fashion. Because they are, after all, morons. There's already a hashtag out there for right-wingers to congregate around called Boycott Coke. Yeah, good God. Let's see.
This is an outrage. America the Beautiful in foreign languages.
Because America can only be beautiful in English.
Never buying Coke again. America the Beautiful in a language other than English is just wrong. Coke lost a lot of drinkers on that one. This is America, damn it. We speak English.
Obama is the Antichrist. Another right-winger.
You can't sing an American song in another language!
Unless maybe it's Where Have All the Flowers Gone.
From now on, the national anthem is in one language, English. Got it, Super Bowl?
Because the Super Bowl is a person you talk to.
F you, Coke, the national anthem wasn't made for your gook and Mexican talking. STFU, speak English.
Hey, Coca-Cola, that's C-O-K-E, Cola,
are we Americans of foreign descent, or are we foreigners living in America? Hate your commercial, speak English.
Still pissed about that Coca-Cola commercial. Get out of America, you ass, W-H-O-L-E-S. What?
Speak American Speak American if you're in America. While you are. Commercials are dumb.
Speak American if you're in America. Commercials are dumb.
Coca-Cola.
Coca-Cola is the official soft drink of illegals crossing the border. And then, some people really have the ability to see the big picture.
Coke combined amnesty and gay agenda into one commercial. I'm sure they would have added gun control in if they could have figured a way.
I'm not racist, but this is America. We speak English.
Nice to see that Coke likes to sing an American song in the terrorist's language. Way to go, Coke. You can leave America.
That Coke commercial sucked. Mexicans, terrorists, Jews, and... are not American. Holy mackerel. Tim from L.A. noting, you know, the Coke commercial is bullshit. When I saw the commercial, I didn't bat an eye. As a person of color, all I saw and heard were people singing in different languages. As a business major, I learned about marketing, and this commercial was your average exploitation of persons of color in their language, capitalizing off the different culture around the U.S. and not giving a shit about multiculturalism in any fashion. Don't think so? Look up fiduciary duty. Then came the right-wingers. You gotta be kidding.
Don't these morons know anything about marketing, the free market, capitalism? Their stupidity and racism is making Coke billions of dollars. As a person of color, I just poo-pooed the commercial as another money-making scam. The nationalistic diatribe from the right, on the other hand, will now pique the interest of Pepsi drinkers and will make Coke Inc. wealthier. On the bright side, the workers, all Teamsters, are now happy. I mean, this was just... this was a stunning display of moron. And it wouldn't be a stunning display of moron without one of America's leading most stunning morons chiming in on it. Oh, yes, Lord, yes. Because, after all, well, yeah. I mean, I'm not interested in giving them free publicity, but Jesus, I mean, that's pretty... It was they were just going for a warm fuzzy. Of course, I guess back before the Internet, when they had to do things like stand around sniffing Ditto machine fluid to get their message out, I guess they had a hissy over, "I'd like to give the world a Coke." Remember that back in the 1970s? Yeah. And never mind the fact that it's a damn near toxic beverage. And gee, do nails still dissolve if left in Coca-Cola long enough? Yeah. But anyway, so pretty innocuous, right? Enter the moron.
Do you have the Coke ad?
Yes, that's a fun one.
Mm-hmm. Is it?
Yeah. It's
great. So somebody tweeted last night and said, "Glenn, what did you think of the Coke ad?" And I said, "Why? You need that to divide us politically?"
See, the rest of the right wing stepped boldly and bravely into the pit, but now that Glenn's sharper than that. Did you see? He had his paranoid hat on. "What'd you think of the Coke ad?" And he said,
"And why? You need that to divide us politically?"
Mm-hmm.
What? Because that's all this ad is.
That's all it is.
That's all this ad is. This is to divide people. It's an in your face.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't like it, if you're offended by it, then you're a racist.
Yep.
If you do like it, well, then you're for immigration.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it is. You're for progress. That's all this is to divide people.
Yeah.
What was it? Remember when Coke used to do the thing on the top of the, and they would all hold hands?
Like to teach the world to sing in perfect harmony.
Right. And now it's, "Hey, have a Coke and we'll divide you."
Because that's what that was. You know, for a right winger and a pig-licking and a millionaire, you'd think the guy would notice that actually this is about making people feel warm and fuzzy about a product that is really, really bad for you. But if we talked about that, then we'd have to note the fact that, well, you know, that there's maybe a problem with marketing and capitalism. And no, we're just going to politically divide you. So what? Is Pepsi going to come out with, we only sing American songs for Pepsi kind of thing? I mean, no, Pepsi's over there eating their own liver because they didn't come up with this. You think? Good God, they're stupid. Jan in the UK says, as an English person, I object to all those right-wing teabaggers, etc., speaking my language. So there. Well, bear in mind, Jan, that they're not speaking your language. Not hardly. God knows they can't spell it. So, but I get it. You know, I want everybody who thinks that English should be the national language and all of that. We have these spasms every few years. We gotta speak English. We gotta speak English good, rightly. Ish. How about a national English exam for the English only crowd? I mean, I loved it that Alan West couldn't even make a passing attempt at figuring out what languages he was hearing. I heard the Coke ad, America Beautiful, sung in languages I didn't know. Steve, distilling this to its essence, really. It's an effing Coke ad. An ad for pop. No, if a fucking pop ad offends you, you're a goddamn moron. Precisely my point. Oh, Steve may have just nailed it. Subject line, Lee Greenwood. Well, I'm glad to be a Pepsi drinker where I know they'll speak English. Oh, Lordy. There's a real possibility there. And besides, I mean, Lee Greenwood is a stellar, noted citizen. Didn't Dim Leader put him on the National Council for the Arts or something like that? Yeah, because he's an artiste. Meanwhile, our buddy Dennis in Kentucky sent me the 10 best left-wing memes in response to the right-wing Coke ad outrage. Because that's what they are. They're an outrage machine. Number one, fun fact, Catherine Lee Bates, author of America the Beautiful, was a lesbian who left the Republican Party in 1924 over its growing xenophobia. ...2014 Super Bowl ads went for $4 million for 30 seconds. 25 million Americans claimed to be Tea Party members. Coke spent 16 cents per member to piss them off with a multilingual ad. What a bargain! By Greptar's Hammer. What a savings. Or, let's see. With Coke airing a multilingual ad celebrating diversity and Pepsi being an outspoken advocate for gay rights, what beverage is left for the right wing to drink? Well, never pose a question without a potential solution. Solution? May we suggest a tall, cool glass of unfiltered West Virginia tap water? Drink up! Teabaggers were so busy being outraged by mistakenly believing America the Beautiful is our national anthem, they forgot to be outraged at the gay couple. Yeah, because the morons did that, too. Don't you love how Coke has turned our national anthem into everyone else's? Thanks for desecrating our national anthem. Signed, you're welcome. Teabaggers are so busy being outraged by mistakenly believing America the Beautiful is our national anthem, they forgot to be outraged at the gay couple. Signed, you're welcome, the devil. So here's where now they can't eat Cheerios because there's an interracial couple in the ad. Subway is being boycotted because the first lady suggested kids eat more vegetables. And now this Coke kerfuffle. Soon they'll have is Chick-fil-A and Limbaugh's sweet tea. Ew. Ew. Oh, by the way, I did notice somewhere earlier today, this is going to be a real problem for the right wing. Because Chick-fil-A is a purveyor of Coca-Cola products. No Pepsi. No, they're an Atlanta company. They'd have to leave Atlanta. Coke ad features multilingual America the Beautiful. Outraged racist right-wingers demand English-only ads. Fill Coke's Facebook page with bad grammar and misspelled words. And I'm sorry, there is a line I will not cross. I stand with Coca-Cola. Pass, thanks. Steve's suggesting another alternative beverage for right-wingers. Hemlock. Stockton Larry in the chat room noting, the composer of the national anthem had a girl's name too, also. I love them. I mean, they make my day. Day after day, they make... Golly, Ned. The country, I mean... And again, I expect any minute to get an email saying, but Bob, these are trifling issues, and there's so much to be worried... Yes, there is so much to be worried about. Guess why? We have so much to be worried about because the corporations who are poisoning us get away with it because the idiots, like the people who are having a hissy over the Coke ad, support them. And Jay Cruzen with an alternate view. Bob, personally, I didn't like the Coke ad. It turned me off. It turned me off because you heard all those languages waving the American flag. How many of their native lands have we bombed or destroyed with our fascist global corporations? Right. That's the thing with PR. Generally, PR is needed by people who are doing bad things in the first place. There's nothing warm and fuzzy about Coca-Cola. It's marketed that way. But it's not good. It's not good for you. You want to, never mind the starches and the carbs, you want to pound on a few pounds? Guzzle Coke. You know, what is it, 9? How much, it was either teaspoons or tablespoons of sugar, 9 or something, in a 12-ounce bottle of Coca-Cola. And the aforementioned dissolving nail. And how much, I don't know the answer to this question. How much of Coca-Cola's profits are offshored? Want to bet it's a number that can be expressed by the phrase, a lot? Yowzer. And it just goes on and on. And Glenn Beck's worried about us being divided.
The guy who makes up history. Right. And yeah, then, of course, as Stockton Larry noting in the chat room, hell, Bob, American Coke doesn't even use sugar now because high fructose corn syrup. True. Absolutely true. That's why when I can find it in my local grocery store and I am in a Coca-Cola buying mood, I buy the Mexican Coke. Because it's still got sugar in it and it tastes like Coke. You know, there's some... And when do I buy them? Rum and Coke. That's about it. This just in from Jason via Twitter. Hell, I've smoked pot for 35-plus years, and I know which song is our national anthem. And a note rolling in from Robert in Australia. Hi, Bob. It was Australia Day last January 26th. It was a public holiday. It's about the only day Australians get close to anything like being patriotic. As long as being patriotic includes a beer and barbecue, no prawns, that's a commercial gimmick. Nice shrimp on the babby? Damn. It celebrates the arrival of the first fleet in Sydney Harbor and the offloading of all the excess prisoners from the British jails. Robert makes a point of spelling jail, G-A-O-L. Yes. Because that's the original spelling. I'll bet you Jan in the UK would probably say, yep, good one on Robert. All the flags and hats, Robert continues, with flag designs on them, on sale, are made in China, so I never buy any. Our national anthem is Advance Australia Fair. Fair as in accordance with the rules or standards, and not the kind you go to on a holiday. Or fair meaning pretty, I guess. No one knows the words beyond the first two or three lines, and it's so dull and boring it puts most people to sleep. And we don't speak English here in Australia. We speak Strawn. Is it? Do I have the? Am I close on that? Yeah. Who said patriotism is the last refuge of scoundrels? Was that Twain? Sounds Twain. But then again, so oftentimes Mark Twain also can turn out to sound like Oscar Wilde. Randy and PA with a question. Want a little fire retardant in your Coke or your Gatorade? One of the ingredients in Coke or Gatorade is brominated vegetable oil. Mmm, delicious with sweet taters. Bromine compounds are nasty chemicals commonly used as fire retardants. It helps the flavorings mix with the water. Well, goody. Yeah. Tim from L.A., official drinks of the right-wingers. The new official drink of the Republican Party. Hydrogen cyanide, hydrofluoric acid, batrachotoxin, Agent Orange, ricin, arsenic, lead, brodiaficum, and strychnine. From the way they behave, I think you can make a pretty cogent argument that that those beverages have been big for a while. But, yeah, we got lots of morons. And just in case, I got to get this nominee out there. Just in case you thought that the CEO of Nestle was having a one-off back when he said that water is not a human right and that people need to pay Nestle to provide them the water of life. No, it was not a one-off. Nestle chairman Peter Brabeck gave an interview to The Guardian, and he said the following. This I should probably warn. This is a duct tape and tennis ball moment. Climate change is an intrinsic part of the development of the world. Since the world has existed, we have had climate changes, and we will have climate change as long as the world exists. For me, the issue is more about what we can we do in order to adapt to climate change and perhaps to try to gain more time. Are we God to say the climate as it is today is the one we have to keep? That's the way it's going to be? We are not God. What we have to assure is that climate change happens within a time frame that humankind can adapt to. If too much CO2 emission is accelerating climate change in a manner that will take away the possibility for us to adapt to it, then we have a problem. But what I think is wrong to say is that we are going to stop climate change today. It's not the natural approach. What we have to get to grips with is the speed with which climate change is happening and to have the same speed for us to adapt to it. How do you even begin with something like that? It is because of industrial processes of the last, 150 years or so that we have ramped up climate change. See, his initial premise is false. Yeah, and so because climate change is natural. Climate change happens. The climate's been changing. The climate changed with the dinosaurs, right? And that's why there weren't any more dinosaurs. And yet, somehow or another, that's not a cautionary tale for Peter Brabeck. Because the dinosaurs couldn't just leave for a warmer planet. And while on the one hand he says, let's not play God and try to affect the climate or say that this climate is right and that climate's not, on the other hand, he wants to be left free to play God and declare what efforts he will tolerate and what efforts he will not. And those that judgment will be based not upon sound science, but rather instead upon his desire for more wealth. In the course of 150 years, we have accelerated the changing of the climate, which, warming, cooling, ice ages, sure. But we have artificially accelerated the rate of change so that we find ourselves in a position of needing to try to decelerate it before it becomes a damn feedback loop, which it may already be. The hockey stick. And what I think is wrong to say is that we are going to stop climate change today. Nobody's saying we're going to stop climate change today. But we have to start trying to at some point. For pity's sakes. And what does he mean by adapt? Because adaptation and mutation are, unless I'm getting this really wrong, and hey, we're only 9 days away from Darwin Day, so it's a good time for a mention, right? Adaptation and mutation are functions of evolution, and evolution is something that takes place on a populational basis so that Peter Brabeck, no matter how badly he might want to adapt, can't. Because he's just Peter Brabeck. He's not a population. God. But I suppose in Peter Brabeck's world, he can adapt because he can just buy him some adaptation. He's like the guy from what? Shell, who said, well, we'll just move north if it gets too hot here. We'll just move north. Never really taking in the globular nature of our planet so that he can keep moving north, but eventually he's going to start going south. And because the whole planet's heating up. Morans. And the folks reporting on this story, Rebecca Lieber. Rebecca Lieber notes, it is a strange position to take for a chocolate producer because the $9 billion cacao industry faces a serious blow from climate change. By 2050, the land supplying half the world's cocoa may become unsuitable for farming because it will be too hot for the heat-sensitive cacao tree. And here's a list of other food being ruined by hotter, drier climates. Well, I guess Peter Brabeck will just plant cacao trees in Saskatchewan, right? The supply for coffee, grapes, apples, peanut butter, and maple syrup is all shrinking. Peanut butter? Damn. But then again, if you recall news stories from a few years back, corporate America can't even produce peanut butter without getting poo in it. And we let these people have control of the money. So in essence, I mean, is Peter Brabeck just saying, you know, F it? We need an anti-climate change machine that'll make us adapt. And how do you adapt to climate change? Does that mean that we paler people really need to evolve us a little bit more melanin in our skin, kind of quick-like? Somehow I don't think that's going to work out. You know what? Maybe that's a part of it. It was years ago when I realized that all these upstanding, God-fearing, Bible-believing Christians who don't believe in evolution have a distinctly racist reason for not believing in evolution, because they don't want to believe we come from a common ancestor, because that might think kinfolks and, oh, goodness. Right? Maybe this is that, too. I don't believe in no damn climate change because I don't want to be getting any darker than what I already am. I mean, a little trucker tan on the left arm. I mean, that's one thing, but, you know, damn. It goes on and on and on. Robert with a question. Hey, Bob, when will Coke go back to its original recipe? You know, the one with the cocaine in it. Ooh, I don't think that's going to happen for a while. But it really did have for the short time, and it was a relatively short time that Coca-Cola actually did contain cocaine. But for that short period of time, it had a transgenerational impact. I mean, like I've said before, I can remember being a little boy and knowing little old blue-haired ladies who took themselves aspirin and drank a bottle of Coca-Cola every day because it just kept them healthy. And, you know, one of those women lived up into way up near 90, up near 100. Pity's sakes. So you begin to see what I meant about it being a very, very busy Moran Monday. Uber busy, hyper busy. And it's the 1%. It's the 1% morons that are especially dangerous. Because by virtue of their wealth in this system, they have a disproportionately greater ability to harm more people more quickly. Look at Peter Brabeck. Oh, by the way, he did walk back his remarks about water. He says, water for drinking and hygiene is a human right, but everything else should be subject to the profit motive. Yeah, really. you may have seen this. Investment advisor and radio babbler Peter Schiff showed up on an episode of the Daily Show to talk about the minimum wage, because, like, son of a gun, really? We interrupt this too, but News Ninja Gene with an update for me. Sorry, Bob. Mexican Coke is ditching cane sugar for high fructose corn syrup. Damn. But, you know, that's News Ninja Gene for you. I mean, he gets up every day and reads the entire internet. Over at Gizmodo, the report, well, this is some real bullshit. Mexican Coke is ditching its key ingredient, cane sugar, for high fructose corn syrup. This is objectively awful. Mexican Coke, which is also widely available in the United States, has cane sugar to thank for its distinctive taste, you know, like old Coca-Cola. By switching to high fructose corn syrup, it will be indistinguishable from boring old American Coke. This is unacceptable. Damn, this is back in November, this post. Executives at Coca-Cola and... Well, it still fits. The people with the money hurt... Executives at Coca-Cola in Latin America decided to make the switch after the Mexican government approved a tax of 1 peso on every liter of soda sold. To be fair, the tax is in place to help curb obesity in a country where more than 70% of people are overweight. But to maintain profits and avoid having to raise the price on a can of soda, Coke execs decided this devastating change was in order. And then the question, why is this such a tragedy? And even as I'm reading that, I'm thinking, oh my God, this is a tragedy. And it's not just because, you know, when I do drink a Coke, I like for it to taste like Coca-Cola. It's a tragedy for what... Really? What will they be making the high fructose corn syrup out of, and where will they be making it? I'm guessing Mexico. I mean, they're not going to buy all their high fructose corn syrup from the United States, are they? Can we meet that demand from our high fructose corn syrup fracking plants? Yes. High fructose corn syrup has to be fracked. You know, fracturing, like you do. What's it called? The differential. Yeah, just like you do to get gasoline, crude oil. Yeah. And it comes from corn. And so if they're going to manufacture this stuff in Mexico, eventually, if they're not already, then that means you need corn for the high fructose corn syrup. And you're really A1 variety of corn for high fructose corn syrup is your Roundup Ready corn, a GMO. Where I, you know, for all we know, the genes have little, or the corn has little genes of, oh, you know, rat tail or something spliced into it, or you know, some of the cobs on the stalks look like baby's arms and stuff like that. High fructose corn syrup also has ingredients that aren't regulated by the USDA. That's certainly working out for us well here in West Virginia, by the way. Like mercury and other chemical compounds which could be very harmful. Huh. So they're going to, and Mexico is where that little interesting teosinte grass over the course of a few millennia was slowly and patiently bioengineered into what we know as maize. You call it corn. And letting loose a bunch of GMO corn pollen into the very cradle of maize culture might not be the best idea in the world. Oh, update at the bottom of this Gizmodo post. Coca-Cola released a statement right around the time this post went up clarifying that this tragic change only applies to Coke distributed in Mexico. Our precious stateside Mexican Coke will continue to be sweetened with 100% cane sugar. You believe that? Because I don't believe that. On and on and on. Artist pointing out, Coca-Cola is a way I believe I avoided getting turista in Mexico. I guess whatever is in it not only dissolves nails, but kills germs. Not sure. And Jack in Shreveport with a little observation. Mexican Coke. So the Coca-Cola company couldn't just take that out of their profits instead? Oh, hell no. The shareholders would have them drawn, quartered, and their parts scattered to the four corners of the realm. Profit, baby. Yeah. Randy asking, I never understood the aspirin-Coca-Cola combination. Would you mind explaining that? I heard about it as a school kid, but never understood it. I never understood it either. I just knew that the little old blue-haired lady drank a Coca-Cola and took an aspirin with it every day because back in the day it was supposed to be some sort of really, really kick-ass combination, you know, back when the cocaine was still in the Coca-Cola. It may be urban legend. Tim from L.A. pointing out, Bob, actually there was no cocaine in Coca-Cola syrup. Cocaine is the byproduct of the natural chemical called erythroxylon. Erythroxylon is stripped chemically from the coca plant to make cocaine. Erythroxylon is used by people who hike Machu Picchu, for example. Oh, I know about this. It's a vasodilator. It ups the heart rate and makes one able to function better in high altitudes. Tim notes, my parents went to Peru and drank and ate erythroxylon tea and cookies. Oh, it's good stuff, I heard. Hell, my mother offered me some coca cookies and I politely declined. Probably a wise choice. But, you know, but even cocaine itself is another one of those things. You got to do all kinds of terrible things to a coca leaf to make it turn into cocaine. And white powder cocaine was never something that the indigenous peoples who relied heavily on that plant ever did, to the best of my knowledge and reading. Just leaves. And you wrap the leaves around a little piece of lime rock, and you tuck it between your cheek and gum, and the next thing you know, you're climbing Machu Picchu. Sheesh. But anyway, where was I? Oh, yes. Peter Schiff. Right winger. Hates the minimum wage. Hates it. Despises it. We don't need it. It's bad for business. It's going to destroy the economy. As previously noted, the right wing has been hollering that the minimum wage would destroy the economy for something approaching 70 years. It hasn't yet. Nor will it ever. But he got himself in a bit of a bind when he agreed to do a bit on The Daily Show. I'm guessing he's not very bright if he was willing to do a bit on The Daily Show. I mean, he really expected them to do a two-minute package with him offering a disquisition on the horrors of the minimum wage? Really? Atne ute aibre. Because eventually, somewhere during the interview, Samantha Bee asked him, because he had mentioned $2 an hour, right, as an acceptable wage. And I guess Samantha Bee asked him who he could imagine would be willing to work for $2 an hour. And he said, and this is a quote, you know, someone that might be, maybe someone who is, what's the politically correct word, you know, for mentally retarded. I believe in the principles this country was founded on. So according to Peter Schiff, this country was founded on principles of exploiting the developmentally delayed. Or other-abled. And he got all up in the lather because he felt like that was unfair to him. Because The Daily Show used his words. And then, because he's got a blog, he went to it to double down It's always fun when they double down. And he wrote the following. There are two groups he would think would be happy to work for $2 an hour. He said the intellectually disabled would work for $2 an hour. He used that phrase. And then he also cited unpaid interns who tend to value work experience and connections more than pay. That whole intern thing, that's a real problem. It's basically indentured servitude of a sort. And by the way, there are sheltered workshops in which people do not have to be paid the minimum wage. Isn't that correct? And wasn't there a huge outcry in the last year, year and a half, over various and sundry scandals taking place inside Goodwill Industries sheltered workshops? And then Schiff said the following. He suggested that the intellectually disabled people, should they prove unable to, quote, perform work that produces a minimum wage level of output, then no employer seeking to make a profit can afford to pay that person the official minimum wage. Many of the jobs they perform may seem mundane to those of normal intelligence, but they are often the most enjoyable and rewarding aspects of the lives of people with intellectual disabilities. I pointed out that if the federal minimum wages were to apply to them, a great many of those opportunities would vanish. Others may disagree, but I believe a job for such a person at $2 per hour is better than no job at all. We could spend the rest of the night just unpacking that. Because how's a person with $2 an hour, regardless of what their ability status is, how's that person going to have health care? Because I would just bet you, I don't see any evidence of it. I don't have anything in front of me. I'd bet you that Peter Schiff probably hates him some Obamacare. And to the extent that they hate Obamacare, you know they really, really hate what? Yeah, universal single-payer health care. Because of the nightmare that is daily unfolding in Canada where people just go to the doctor when they're sick. Whew. Given half a chance, these jackasses will destroy everything. And they'll do it all the while claiming that it's good for business. So, you get the idea. No, we have no dearth of morons this Moran Monday. Not in the least. And you know what? You've probably got people you would like to nominate yourself, and you are free to do so. The phone lines, of course, are open, 304-658-3333. And it's open on Skype as well. Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn is how you reach the program on Skype. Yeah, Jan and Jerry in Vegas noting, you know, $2 an hour goes along with dumpster diving. And maybe you can find a box of Band-Aids at the bottom of the dumpster, too, and there's your health care. Die quickly. All right? We are not even remotely close to done. This in from Tim from L.A. You remember the story of the scout leaders who kicked over a rock formation? Well, there is at least a little bit of justice being eked out. Glenn Taylor was charged this past Friday with criminal mischief for kicking over a multi-million-year-old rock formation in the Goblin Valley State Park in southeastern Utah. And his buddy, David Hall, was charged with aiding criminal mischief for recording the destruction, because these morons posted it to YouTube, and that's how they wound up getting busted. Remember, this is Moran Monday. I guess Peter Brabick would say that they were just adapting to their environment. Eesh. Slays me. So, let's take a little break and light up the phones, get the conversation going, and, you know, enjoy the beginning of this February, the shortest month in the year, which is, of course, since it is the shortest month of the year, devoted to Black history. Yeah, that one started, too. Why ain't we got no White History Month? Somewhere Dr. John is kicking a chair leg. No, that really did. That went out on the Twitters. Not kidding. I don't know. Sorry, looking for a bumper here, too. Any suggestions? Yeah, me neither. Well, let's see. Well, yeah. Here, this might work. Let's try this. Tom Waits is always fun. This is for you, Peter Brabick. This is the horn.
I don't go to church on Sunday. Don't get on my knees to pray. Don't memorize the books of the Bible. I've got my own special way. I know. Maybe just a little bit more. I fall down on my knees every Sunday at the Rev. Lee's candy store. Well, I've got to be a chocolate Jesus. Make me feel good inside. Got to be a chocolate Jesus. Keep me satisfied. No almond joy. There ain't nothing better than suitable for this boy. Well, that's the only thing that can pick me up. It's better than a cup of gold. You see, only a chocolate Jesus
Here for Peter Brabick. Chocolate Jesus, Tom Waits, and Shrinking Habitat for Cacao Trees. Well, don't worry. Let's see. So the peanut butter's going, the maple syrup's going, the chocolate's going, the bananas may be gone. You know, the Columbian Exchange was pretty cool for a while. Food-wise. And, yeah, Mexico's going to need a lot more Roundup-ready corn. Oh, dear. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Wow, Bob.
Hello?
I don't know. Can you hear me?
I got you.
Can you hear me?
I hear
you. Okay. I don't know.
Did that to you, too, huh?
Oh, my God. It's just, wow. I mean.
Yeah, but which part? I mean, so far it's been a real onion tonight. I mean, layer after layer.
It's just layer after layer after layer of just straight up bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
It's, I mean, I need to, you know what, I need to put on one of those wading boots. Is that what the people wear?
Yeah, well, no, at this point I think you want your hazmat suit.
Yeah. Yeah, because, you know, listening to the show and this, I'm surprised that, you know, Glenn Beck, so he's upset because different people from different nations were singing in different languages, America the Beautiful.
Yeah, to hustle a corporate product for profit.
Right. And on top of the fact, like you said, that is not even our national anthem. But then again, I love the fact that it was written by a lesbian.
Beautiful, ain't it?
Oh, when you talk about the irony, I mean, but the fact, you know, between him and then the idiot, the $2 an hour, I mean, you know, a lot of times I just sit and listen to the show, and I just enjoy listening, and I don't call in.
Yeah, right, exactly. You just listen, and you kick the occasional piece of furniture, and then go out for shrimp tacos, and, you know.
Right. Yeah. Oh, and by the way, thank you for reminding me about the shrimp tacos, because, yes, they not only sell Mexican Coke on that food truck, they sell Mexican 7-Up, too.
Oh.
Thank you. You too.
Yeah, I don't know how it, while I was down in Texas, I actually had a Dr. Pepper that had cane sugar in it, and wow.
And speaking of coke, you know, I was in Atlanta last year. You know, when I came out to my family and everything, when I took Jan to visit. And so we went, of course, to the Coke Museum.
Of course.
You know, that's what you do when you're in Atlanta. So we're doing the tour, and, you know, they're showing all their advertisements and stuff. And, of course, they showed the one, the first, you know, advertisement with a black person on it. And my wife, Jan, and my sister all looked at me, directly at me, like, don't you dare. Hey, please don't cause any trouble in the Coke Museum, please. I was like, wait, you guys are proud of the fact that it took you, let's see, I think the first, you know, print ad with black people in it was like in the late 60s. And how long had Coke been in the...
It took, wow, that, Jesus, really, the late, well, they probably ran it during Julia.
Or I Spy.
Yeah. Oh, for pity's sake.
So the things that I hear, and then we have the $2 an hour asshole. See, they got to be the cusser. You know, I've been so good.
I know.
When I call.
But you're not hot as fish grease yet.
You know, no, but this motherfucker, yes, I said it. How in God's green earth? Because remember we had this conversation about, you know, do they not get it? Because, see, the rich people, that 1%, they're not going to shop at Walmart.
Oh, by the way, whose profits are falling? Did you notice?
Uh-huh.
Did you notice what they blamed?
No. Oh, Jesus. Okay. I'm not driving. I'm sitting in the cab parked.
Okay. Okay.
So what?
Well, no, this is just the part of the program where I get to get out my tattered old velvet robe with the frayed moons and stars on the sleeves, and my magic eight ball with the cracked glass that always says answer hazy, ask again later, because Walmart has declared that their profits are flat and they're losing money, and they said the reason they're losing money is because of the cuts that the Republicans that they so fondly elect enacted in food stamp benefits.
Well, y'all elected them.
Yeah, but I mean, I do remember saying, you know, at some point in time, the CEO there in Bentonville is going to pick up the phone and call Washington and say, "What the hell you boys think you're doing? Don't you realize that's a big chunk of our business?"
Hello. And see, this is okay.
Because folks on food stamps don't go to whole paycheck.
No. No.
They go to Wally World.
And I got something about part of a county in Kentucky, which is 92% white and 95% Republican, is getting hard hit by the same people in Washington that are cutting food stamps.
Mm-hmm. So that privilege just kind of slewing away, isn't it?
Yeah, because it's like, okay, folks, see, y'all sitting back and talking about us Negroes, you know, taking those Hispanic people coming and taking, you know, and
singing songs the wrong way and stuff in bad
and
languages.
Songs and gosh, damn it, darn it, and all that.
What do you want to bet the same people that got pissed off about that Coke ad? Got pissed off about the way Ray Charles sang America the Beautiful.
Which is the best rendition ever.
Yes.
You know, it's the same people that, it's so funny because, you know, everybody was all up in arms about the Cheerio ad. And it was, the first time I saw that ad with the little girl with the, you know, the biracial parents, and me being me, when I saw the ad, I was like, whoa, wait. And I was just waiting for the outrage because I knew it was coming. Because it's like, you know, you're showing a proper white girl married to one of those African-American bucks.
You really you had to say Bucks, didn't you, Tracy?
Yes.
I understand. It's okay.
I had to go there.
You went there.
I had to go. Well, I know, and what I might as well just, since I said Buck, I might as well just go ahead and take away the African American and say what I know. They said Big Black Buck. I said it.
Yes. And so. See, that's the thing. That was their hissy last year.
Mm-hmm.
So some poor little staffer who had access to a keyboard just had his or her career eliminated at MSNBC because they pointed out that Cheerios was coming back with a repeat
mm-hmm.
of the same little adorable family and predicted that the right wing would go batshit crazy.
Batshit crazy.
Yeah, and which they proceeded to do over the tweet. And then Phil Griffin, who runs that outfit, put out a pathetic, embarrassing apology and said, you know, heads will roll. Only it turns out, well, it was just a different ad they had to hissy over.
And see, I'm so tired of these people kowtowing to these crazy white people. And the couple of the smattering of the pepper in that group too, because we have a couple of black tea partiers too, I know.
Well, but I mean, Alan West was outraged, you know, bad Urkel. and he said, I mean, the man, he sat in the Congress for 2 years, two long demented years. He sat in the Congress and he's going to run again. And he wrote that singing America to the, I mean, and he wasn't being ironic. He wasn't being funny. Singing America the Beautiful in a language other than English that he doesn't recognize has put America on the path to perdition. He said that, path to perdition.
Path to perdition?
Yes, ma'am.
No, it was putting America...
You know, having 2% of your population in prison? No, the path to perdition is nowhere near that. Having hungry people in your country? Nope, no path to perdition.
Nope.
Singing America the Beautiful in, a line from America the Beautiful in Arabic? Path to perdition.
Well, it's the same people. And who was that? Ben Carson? The doctor?
Oh, dear God.
Doctor, that Obamacare was as bad as slavery.
Mm, yeah. Oh, yeah. That. Yeah.
And so I want him to go sit down and watch 12 Years a Slave. And
that's just Hollywood liberalism.
Right. Mm-hmm. And you know. Right. So, oh, speaking of 12 Years a Slave, because you know I'm a troublemaker, right?
Absolutely. That's what we love about you.
Notice that. And so. I didn't go to church last Sunday because I got to see the screen of 12 Years a Slave with Danny Glover doing the commentary about it afterwards and whatnot and so forth. And there was an event at my church that one of the ministers wanted me to attend, and I said, well, I could probably be there for that, but I wouldn't be there for church because, you know, of the aforementioned event. I was. Did you notice how I slipped in the aforementioned?
Yeah, yes, I did. I did.
And did I use it correctly?
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
Okay, so, see, Negroes do have sense. Anyhow. So,
with that.
So I did go to church I made it to the event, which was basically a newcomer's reception, and they wanted me to speak about why I go to my church. And so I spoke, and then I left. So yesterday... Reverend Pat actually said, so how was the movie? And picking a cue from Dr. Bill, I said, well, this is how I feel, and this is how a couple of people that I know feel, that every white person in America should sit down and watch that movie and then go sit somewhere and have a talk with themselves and then shut the hell up. And this is talking to one of the ministers who, yes, is white. Because, see, that's how I talk to people. Because, see, I'm old enough and black enough. I'm at that point in my life, Bob, that I'm no longer going to be the noble Negro. And because I was raised to be this deferential.
Have you run all out of noble?
I've run out of noble. I ran out of noble. Basically, I ran out of noble in 2009. Started running out. And then by 2010, I was fresh out. And by... you know, 2012, I was just done. So I'm done. Because I just, you know, and with that said, my one of the pastors, she said, you know what, you're right. Because she hadn't seen it yet. And so what she wants to do is, because we have a group at the church called Azania, which is people of African descent. And then you know me. I'm like, well, aren't we all people of African descent? Uh-oh.
Yeah.
That's
the mother continent. Yeah.
And, you know, but anyway, so she laughed. But I told she wants us to sponsor once 12 Years a Slave comes out on DVD. We're going to sponsor a viewing of it at the church.
That'd be nice.
And have a discussion about race relations in America. And guess who's in charge of that?
You?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that'll be fun.
Oh, yeah. Because, see, like I said, I am, like what I told you, I think I told you guys when I went to go to, when Jan and I, or when I went to Netroots Nation, which I'll never do again. I mean, it was interesting, and I enjoyed myself for the most part, but I was troubled because I get tired of hearing about these progressive people, and I don't see anybody that looks like me on the dais. You know, like when I went to the Women's Caucus, there were no black women there on the caucus. You know, at the, then I went to the Gay and Lesbian Caucus, no, you know, people of color. And so, me being me, I stood up and mentioned that. I said, so where are the black folk at? You know? And so, when I went to the Gay and Lesbian Caucus, I said, and this is back in June, so it's before they, you know, shut down DOMA and repealed Prop 8. I said, I'm newly gay, but I've been black and a woman all my life, and I know about, you know, oppression and inhumanity and, you know, separate but nowhere near equal and all the things, the discrimination and all these things. And I come here to hear about, you know, gay issues and whatnot and so forth, but I don't see anybody that looks like me up here. And you wonder how Prop 8 passed. Because I'm wondering, where did any of you, you know, you lofty people go to the communities and go to the community centers and to the churches and to the, you know, Catholic churches, black churches or what have you, and talk to anybody about Prop 8 and actually, you know, do like, see, they, you know, back when I was a kid.
Well, why would you do that, Tracy?
Well, maybe because, you know, there are other issues. Well, exactly, I just say...
No, but when you got privilege on your side, you know what the issues that matter are. And you can tell the people, what issues ought to matter to them.
Right. And that's what I told, because, I mean, as much as, you know, getting married should be a right, but I know for a fact there are gay youth out there living on the street who are being kicked out of their home because they're gay, or not being able to get into foster care because they're gay, and all, you know, no health care because they're, you know, and why are these issues not being addressed? And along with privilege, you know, the whole thing, like yesterday at church, my pastor, and he was talking about being a rebel rouser and a troublemaker. You know, there are a lot of issues, but we should not, and he's a Brit. And he's like, I don't understand how in this country, in just Los Angeles, you know, just in Los Angeles alone, every single day there are 50,000 men, women, and children living on the street each day. One night they might have a place to sleep, you know, but for the most part, for every somebody that finds a place to sleep for the night, there's at least 50,000 other people living on the streets or in their cars or what have you. Just in L.A. County alone, we have a food bank at our church that is running out of food every Saturday because of these cuts to SNAP. So when you start talking about making trouble and, you know, you're so worried about gay marriage, but why are you not calling and writing your congressperson and your senator about these crazy cuts to food stamps so people can have basic, just get their basic needs met. You know, and like you said, I now that you mentioned about the Walmart, I do now remember hearing about that, and I chuckled. For the same reason why you chuckled about, you know, the idiots. When you people don't have money, they can't buy anything. When you have to choose between eating dinner and paying rent,
yeah,
or going to the hospital.
Yeah, I got a place to live, got no food to eat. Got some food to eat, got no place to live.
I have no place to live. I'm sick, but I can't pay. I'm sick, but when I pay for the bill, I'm not going to have anything to eat or a place to live.
Yeah, and, you know, Sandra just pointed out via Twitter a couple of minutes ago, Tracy, noting that Walmart pays poverty wages that don't keep up with food inflation and high-ass prices across the board, and she says, see Henry Ford. And by that, of course, she means Henry Ford, who was about as odious a human being as one can imagine.
As one could imagine, but at least he got it.
Well, he understood that he wasn't going to be in the car business very damn long. If the people who were building his cars for him couldn't afford to buy them. Right.
I mean, when you have, where was it, Walmart in Indiana or somewhere where they had to have a food drive for their employees?
Oh, that was Thanksgiving, yeah. Or was it Christmas?
You're working at Walmart. There's food there. Why in God's name do I have to have a food drive for my employees?
But you need to know a little bit about the internal structure of Walmart, though, because you know when you get a gig running a Wally World, it's a nice gig. You know, in a crappy little place like this, it might be the nicest house in town. But your performance or your pay is in part based upon your ability to maximize profit to the exclusion of every damn thing else.
Mm-hmm.
And so consequently, paying human wages. Well, if you pay a buck extra to that guy over there stocking the shelves, that's a buck that's not going to go into your damn bonus.
Mm-hmm.
It's the very soul of predatory conduct.
It's no different from predatory lending practices with these. Do you guys have payday loans out there?
It's the one thing we don't have here in West Virginia, but they're all over the place everywhere else.
Okay. I'm listening to stuff, and Sandra could probably attest to the ones that we hear out here in California, about they actually have payday loans now that you can get to pay off your other payday loans.
Hoo-wee, the spiral of debt.
The spiral. And then they said, here's the kicker, how they said, well, we're your friends, and we're just trying to help you.
Yeah.
And I'm like, no, you're not trying to help me, because, you know, I got caught for a minute in that cycle of the payday loan. And let me tell you, getting out of that quagmire ain't no joke.
No, that's labors of Hercules stuff.
You know, I mean, my God, it took me a good 2-3 years to finally get away from all that. Well, excuse me. And then on top of that, what's even funnier is that every so often I get a letter from one of those companies. Oh, Ms. Porter, we miss you. So you can kiss my...
Yeah, I bet you do. And you miss me and my 97% interest I was paying.
Right. Exactly. You know, and it's just what people can get away with when people are desperate. And that's what sickens me, because, you know, I still have this thing about, you know, fair and balanced. Oh, you mean faux news? What they if time I hear them say that, I'm like, kiss my ass. You wouldn't know if fair or balanced any. I mean, your balance would be, you know, back in the day, like when they would put some when somebody went to the meat market or whatever, and the butcher would put his thumb on the scale, yeah, to make it weigh more, you know.
Oh, and we haven't even gotten to John Elway yet. Did you catch him last night or yesterday afternoon before the Super Bowl?
See, no, because see, I was doing a lot of running around till I got to my friend's house. Oh, I went to my first Super Bowl party hosted by gay people. Wow.
Great party.
Nothing better.
Great party.
The greatest party ever, but nothing better. Nothing better than watching gay men watching football.
Now you're going to get me in trouble again.
No, because I love because it was just the running, because there were some of the guys that know about football, of course, the ones that didn't. And I was sitting there, I'm like, see, quit playing with me, because I'm not going to say what we were saying at the party, because I don't want anybody to be offended or anything like that. The best part of the evening was when because the commercials, well, yeah, but the David Beckham commercial.
Oh my!
Bedlam.
Really? Bedlam.
It's swarming.
were there smelling salts and fainting couches involved?
Yes, there were fainting couches. Yes. I'm sitting there crying. I am in tears. I was just in absolute tears. So I'm thinking of that happy moment now. So you could tell me about John Elway and did Joe Namath's coat. Okay, go ahead.
No, Joe Namath's coat. Oh my God. No, I the last time I saw that coat, Huggy Bear was wearing it on Starsky and Hutch.
I'm telling you. Oh my God, they was messing with some platforms and a pimp hat.
Okay, Tracy, let's just finish it. What color would the pimp hat be?
Oh, purple.
I knew you were going to say purple. I knew it. Oh, no, John Elway, it was on Fox, so Fox was interviewing and John Elway and yada, yada, yada. And so he does this thing where he says that he doesn't believe in safety nets. Really, he said.
How much is John Elway worth?
Oh, God knows, and he runs a whole. But the thing is, he runs a whole bunch of car dealerships.
Exactly.
And you think there might have been any cash for clunkers money in there? I think Marty pointed that out early on.
Mm-hmm.
No safety net.
Mm-hmm. But I bet you he takes every deduction and everything that he can get, you know, every federal, you know, whatever, you know, and if he hires somebody that's disabled or whatever, or, you know. Okay, so he doesn't believe in safety net. Why is it that people who have money don't believe in safety net? I don't know, because you don't need one.
And don't ever think anybody you like is going to need one. That's the important part, Tracy.
And see, that's, you know, and this is where the fun part comes in. Because a lot of folk, you know, before that, the recession that we're slowly crawling out of hit, there was a lot of people that got hit hard who never thought they were going to need a safety net. And guess what? They do now.
Downright handy.
Came right in handy, didn't it? When, you know, that people were getting their houses taken and, you know, they needed emergency assistance and emergency food stamps. And it's, you know, it's so funny now that I think about the whole food stamp thing, and it's almost like, and, you know, I try not to be a conspiracy theorist and stuff like that because it makes me sound crazy. But then again, I listen to your show and watch the news, so how can I help not be crazy? Not because of your show, but because of the things that I hear.
No. I run Screaming Into the Night every night.
Okay. So, you know, back in the day, and, you know, and well, it, at least, in, you know, there was actual food stamps.
you know, you had the food stamp book and stuff like that. And then I know on the other side of the country and in the Midwest, we didn't get the cards, the EBT cards out here until after a lot of on the East Coast, because I guess they started moving, they started east and slowly moved it west. I think California, we were like the last states or whatever on the West Coast to get the, you know, the staff cards or whatever. And so me being me, and it just popped in my head. It's like, it's almost like they saw, you know, the people in the hierarchy, you know, in the black dark rooms that are as our government. Like, well, you know, we're going to probably have a whole, you know, we're going to have recessions. We're going to have all this. And we're going to need people are going to need to get on food stamps. But these, there are going to be people who are too embarrassed to do it and stuff like that. So we're going to need another way for them to pay for their food. Hey, why don't we just put it all on a debit card so nobody will know?
And give the Wall Street banks a lot of money for administering it.
Yes. Because, you know, when you have an EBT card now, because see, now, you know, you have your food stamps and your cash benefits on the same card. And so now when you want to get your money, you have to pay, you know, an ATM fee, or, you know, you just can't get your money out. You know, you got to pay a fee.
Oh, no, yeah.
And like you said, we have, well, so we still have, we have the people who caused the recession by their greed and whatnot and so forth, and people losing their homes and, you know, with no recourse. And now the people who lost their homes have to depend on the same Wall Street banks to make sure they get their money and their food stamps.
But see, I got to thinking about that though, Tracy. And there's a reason it works that way. I think back this is purely speculation. But I think back in the day when it was just line up for the cheese, you know, commodities.
Hey, look, I miss that government cheese.
That government cheese is good. But the thing is, back when you just lined up for the government cheese, that meant that, you know, retailers weren't getting retail prices for it, and they were just giving away free food at wholesale or less, okay, because it was excess produce. So in order to keep the system going, you have to have a buy-in from the people who have the money. And enter food stamps. So instead of standing in line, you know, we got an old gag around here. Why can't you take a group picture of West Virginians? Because every time the photographer says cheese, we form a single line. But so if you get a buy-in from the retail industry, well, then, you know, the people are buying at retail prices in grocery stores. So that means the Grocers Association suddenly has they've got skin in the game on food security.
Mm-hmm.
And then after a while, you try to get a buy-in from Wall Street so that they've got skin in the game for administering the fund.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how it was supposed to work. Everybody, you know, everybody was getting a little piece. You know, what's the line from The Godfather? Everybody was wetting their beaks.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody was happy.
Mm-hmm.
Well, enter the teabaggers who don't, you know, they don't care. They just, the only thing they want to do is throw bricks through windows. Doesn't matter whose window. They'll throw it through their own window if they're out of windows, because they just got a thing about bricks and windows.
And black people.
Yeah, so and then, you know, they convince themselves that the only people getting food stamps are people whose skin is darker than theirs.
Mm-hmm.
And it becomes a moral imperative because people are just living in a culture of dependency, and the next thing you know, boom, you know, Mike Huckabee, boom, Rick Santorum, boom, 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 Alan West, boom. And all of a sudden, the guy, the CEO in Bentonville's going, what in the f- is going on here? Okay, I understand. They don't like the poor people, but now they're messing with me, and I'm filthy rich.
Yes.
And I'm not going to sit still for this shit.
You're upsetting the apple cart, dude. You know, quit tripping. You know, I would love to be a fly on the wall to hear the phone call of these people railing against, you know, these idiots in Washington. Because, like, it's one of those things, you know, like they used to, you know, grandma used to say, you're cutting off your nose to spite your face. There's a lot of noses lying around, aren't there?
And the razors are flying.
Just bam, bam. And it's like, but the sad part is, you and I get it, okay? The Horn family gets it. But like I said, those people down in Kentuckystan, who are in those counties that are 90-some-odd percent white and 90-some-odd percent Republican, don't get it.
By the way, I did start watching Justified.
And what you think? What you think?
Oh, I'm loving it.
Man, I told you. I told you.
Yes, indeed.
And I don't normally like Timothy Oliphant. I used to say Timothy Elephant, but he's so cool in this show, you know. And just watching. You know, like you said, oh my God, they have hillbilly. You're hearing about hillbilly heroin on the West Coast. I'm like, yes, Bob, I sure am. But it opened up my eyes to a whole lot of things. That what I'm looking forward to is when you get to the season, which I think is season 3, when they're doing about the about coal mining and stuff like that. Now, I need for you, before you watch that season, I need to make sure you take your Xanax first.
Oh, you mean you mean get shot in the neck with a Thorazine dart?
Yes, because I know you. And see, of course, I was upset because I know you. And so it's going to hit you hard.
Okay, season 3.
I believe it's season 2 or 3. I can't remember, but it's going to hit you hard. And because it's, you know, the whole, you know, mountaintop removal thing is so close to you, and
they actually get to that issue. It gets mentioned.
It may not so much get mentioned, but what these coal companies were doing about the whole thing about taking people, you know, taking people's land and, you know, and using the pillars of the community to do so, and people's pockets being lined. It's dirty, because I believe we talked about that, how, you know, when the town hall burned down and the courthouse with all the deeds in it, and then what deed? We'll give us the deed. Well, we don't have the deed. The courthouse, oh, well, then it's not your land. But, and get off your, I bought
it. Yeah, where's your deed?
Where's your deed? You know, like, you know, in, 12 Years a Slave. Well, where are your papers? Well, I don't. What's in your slave? You know.
That's how it shakes out, yeah.
So that's how it works out. It's like, so where is your proof as to who you are or to what rightfully belongs to you? And see, that's where, you know, you get people, when I hear people, and I have to honestly say the only time I hear anything about Glenn Beck is from your show or from your tweet.
Oh, shame on me then.
No, but it keeps me aware of what's going on with these people, because see, those people, and I say those people because they say those people about me and my pen and anybody else that doesn't look like them, you know, who are... You know, I don't know. This country is a step away from me having to have papers to prove that I'm an American at the rate things are going. Because, you know, you could be for that, you know, that dark cotton in Africa because, you know, you use black. And I tell people, I'm no more African than you are, because I got into this discussion about when people ask me, you know, about certain things, I said, well, I'm an American of slave descent. oh, are you afraid, are you ashamed of being from Africa? I said, no, but I'm not from Africa. Maybe, you know, 200, 300, 400 years ago, I had, you know, some of my folks might come from Africa, or they could have come from a whole lot of other places. I won't know until I get my DNA tested, which will cost me $200 to do so. So, no, I'm an American. You know, I could only go back as far as my great-great-grandmother. And, you know, because, again, that history will forever be lost because nobody talked about my, you know, I know nothing about anybody older than my mother, really, in my family or my grandmother. Because once my family got here from running away from the South, it was like the South never existed anymore. I have no idea.
Forget it as fast as you can.
Yes, yeah. Forget it. The South does no longer exist in our world. You know, and after, you know, taking Black history classes and reading Warmth of Other Suns and just in my own research, I now know why. So, you know, my family and millions of other Black folks did that great migration from the South to the North, to the East, and finally to the West to get away from the South. Running, they didn't migrate to, you know, oh, we're tired of living here. We're just going to go somewhere else. No, they were running for their lives. They knew that if they stayed in that part of the country, that their kids would not have a chance, especially their son, who, if they looked cross-eyed at a white woman, could be killed. Hello, Emmett Till. And just be killed just because you're Black. No other reason. I just, you know, so a couple of white boys walking down the street and a brother just walking down the street. You know, I don't like the look of that nigga. I think he should die. So why would anybody want to stay there? And those who got out, got out. And never looked back. And with, you know, when somebody got on that bus or that train to leave or whatever to leave there, they knew they were leaving and would probably never return. So when I had the customer in my cab who made joke about lynching.
Yeah, that was a hottest fish grease moment.
Yeah, that was a hottest fish grease moment. That right there and me being who I am, like I said, remember about the noble Negro?
Yeah, fresh out.
Yeah, fresh out of Noble Negro. You know, fresh out.
Tracy, new and improved with less nobility.
With less nobility. Exactly.
99% nobility free.
Exactly. Exactly. So when I had the chance to school that bastard on, you know, lynching and what that entails, and then finished it off by saying, because there were Jewish people in the cab with them, and I said, you joking and laughing about lynching would be the same as me sitting here and joking and laughing about the Holocaust.
Thereabouts. By the way, you got fan mail.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, Tim from L.A., fan mail for Tracy. Bob, amen to Tracy. I love her, and she's an awesome person. I'm truly glad you have her on, as she does speak truth to power as a person of color. But still, from one person of color to another, why would Tracy offer you a room instead of me? Thank you, Tracy, and you're doing a fine job. Keep on rapping the truth, and Bob, keep having her on, as she represents the great lefties in Los Angeles.
Oh,
see,
no.
There you are, just keeping Tim down.
Oh, I forgot to tell you, Tim, my son moved back home, so.
Oh, so I'm out of a room, too. Okay.
You're out of everybody. Nobody. Well, I still have a couch, and it's a very comfortable couch, actually, because the couch is one of those L-shaped numbers with a shade. Actually, my couch is nice. I've got it I was looking for furniture because my furniture is about tapped out, and I knew that I was going to have people out and about. This was 2 years ago when I was going to have my surgery, and I knew people were going to be coming over, and I'm like, okay, I got to get a new couch. And I knew, you know how you know what you want, but you don't know what you want?
Yep.
If that makes sense?
I live there.
And then, and then you see it, and you're like, well, they, duh, hello, this is what I was looking for. Kind of like my wedding. Speaking of which, I said yes to the dress, Bob.
Ooh!
I'll send you guys a picture of it. Oh, and then another thing, because everybody knows I'm getting married, and I'm having this small, intimate ceremony in December. But I'm still having that, but what had happened was, of course, I started going to my church, and you know how I talk about my church all the time, and how much I love it. And, of course, my church family, but there's no way in hell that I can afford to invite anybody else to the wedding, to the reception. So what Dad and I decided to do, because, and we love our pastor, and if I'm going to marry, you know, not if, but when I marry my girl, I want to be married by somebody that I love. And I truly love my pastor. My pastor is so amazing that my girl, who is Jewish, goes to my church. That's just how much my pastor rocks, okay? She hasn't been into a temple, synagogue, or whatever since she was about this one. So, you know, we're talking a minute, but we talked about it. So what we're going to do, and if anybody, and I'll put more information on the Horn page
if I
have permission.
Absolutely.
I am having a church wedding at my church, June 21st. And I don't care who you are, if you're in L.A. on that day, you're invited to our wedding.
Well, I doubt that I will be, but I'll find some way to take note of the date and, you know, hoist a glass of something here in your honor.
If we work it out, we might have it because my church does internet broadcasting. And we might, because I'm going to talk to my pastor about it, we might be videotaping it live so it could go out on the web.
Oh, webcasting. How cool.
Mm-hmm. So, there might be that chance also. And I'll know more in the preceding months. But if I can make it happen, I will. Because I know my Horn family would be more than happy. Because like I said, for the first time in my life, I'm in love. Okay, and I want...
Which is just a beautiful thing right there all by itself.
Yes, and I want people to... The people that I love, which is my church family, my biological family, and friends and people that I have met along the way, and my Horn family especially, because you guys opened up your doors and your arms to me a couple of years ago when I just called in on a whim. And I've been feeling the love ever since. When I went through my surgery and when I broke down about, you know, being, you know, having a felony and being criminalized from taking care of my child and these people in this country who are robbing and raping and pillaging this country who will answer to nothing. Nothing. But you could throw me in jail for $6,000. So you say. Or you can have, you know, young man like Trayvon Martin shot down in the street just because he looked like he was doing something wrong. Hence the lynching. Because when people say everything's okay, we have a black president, get over it. No. Because
No. But you know what? Exactly. And proof of that, you know, Donald Trump and that thing on his head. I think it's like a runaway Muppet or something. But,
no, I think it's a Tribble. What is it? The Trouble with Tribbles?
Yeah, but well, Donald Trump and that thing on his head after Barack Obama gave his pregame interview to Fox. Barack Obama,
Donald Trump
jumped out to say, "Well, why won't he?" He needs to wear a tie, that guy does. A tie is what he needs. Yeah, he ain't wearing no tie. I mean, he's the president of the frickin' United States. I mean, where's the tie? You know what? I got to send him some of my ties from Macy's.
He really said that?
Yeah, he called the president out for not wearing a tie in a pre-Super Bowl interview.
Well, these are the same people who, you know, during, you know, one of the Washington press conferences, you know, asked, I feel so bad for the head of the Washington press corps, when they were asking, well, Michelle Obama, is she using taxpayer dollars to come home?
Right. Oh, by the way, big question coming in from the chat room. What church?
Oh, it's called Founders Metropolitan Community Church. It's in Los Feliz. It's one of the first gay churches in Los Angeles. Oh, as a matter of fact, it's just look up MCC Los Angeles. That's the easiest way to do it. And like I said, it's at 4 o'clock. In the afternoon, nothing fancy. We're just going to have a cake and punch reception in the reception hall afterwards. So I will need to know kind of how many people will, you know, try to attend. And then
now, is that going to be the classic Baptist wedding punch with the sherbet and the ginger ale?
You know, and because this is since we have, you know what, we should do that. Oh my God, Bob! Yes, we will have that. Holy cow, dude! I so forgot about that. Thank you, Bob, for that. That will be on the list. We will have.
Oh, I wouldn't be committing to that yet because you got. That's one of those. That's why you're gonna have to run that past. Yeah.
I won't commit to it because basically this is how much I love my church. Basically, my whole church is basically gonna. I feel like Judy Garland and Mickey Rooney. Let's find a barn and put on a show.
Exactly. That's what it should be like.
Well, so we're going to, let's get a church and put on a wedding. And so basically my whole church is, you know, just doing this for me because they love me and I love them. But so we're going to have, like I said, cake, punch, and coffee after the ceremony. And then to top everything off, Jan was really good friends with the oldest gay clubs here in LA called Oil Can Harry. And on Saturday night, our disco night. So, they're giving us, they have an upstairs loft that has, they do karaoke and they have their own separate bar up there. So we have that part of from 7 o'clock to 9:30. That's all ours. There is a private party, so we'll have hors d'oeuvres and stuff up there. And there will be karaoke, and there will be gay men dancing to disco music.
And there will be much merriment.
And here's the best part, because downstairs they have, you know, two bars and they have a stage. So when it's time to do the bouquet toss, we're going, all of us are going downstairs. And yes, I will be tossing my bouquet. We will have to video my bouquet toss. To all the guys, because the lesbians probably won't fight for the bouquet, but my gay men friends, they're like, oh yes, it's going to be on.
Because weddings aren't any fun if there isn't just absolute mayhem over the bouquet.
There has to be mayhem over the bouquet. There absolutely has to be. So this is what we're going to do. And like I said, I'm inviting my Horn family. And like I said, I hope I can get the webcast going. Because I'm pretty sure we can. Because I just think, you know, for...
It's not as complicated as it might seem.
No, because we already have the setup. We have the setup. All of our... And if anybody decides that they ever just want to watch, and you know, want to watch our church services, because, like I said, MCC Los Angeles, we broadcast live all of our services. And on top of that, you can watch... all of our, you know, the previous services on our webpage. But we have church 11 o'clock. We even have a Spanish service at 1:30 in the afternoon every Thursday, Sunday. So we have the 9 o'clock service, which is the more traditional service, and then we have the 11 o'clock service, which is the, you know, the more contemporary service. But to see gay people at church praising the Lord, and we do let straight people in the church, too. We don't discriminate. We actually do have a lot of straight members. But because I had a friend of mine who left the church because she was gay and she basically got kicked out. And she came to church with me a couple of Sundays ago, and she was almost in tears because she loves the Lord. I mean, she went to Bible college, for God's sake. I mean, she was a youth pastor and got kicked out because she's gay. You know, because, you know, those us homosexuals, we're predators. And you know, we're going to, you know.
Well, and it's catching, too.
You know.
I mean, you can get the gay picking up the wrong fork in a silver service.
So we can't. So when we do communion, we all, you know, we go up separately, or you could go up as a family or as a couple or whatever. And she went up with me and Alex and Jan.
Well, yeah, I'm so glad that there's a welcoming place like that, because, you know, obviously I'm not I'm thoroughly, completely, totally, and unabashedly unchurched.
Yeah.
But there are people out there for whom the church experience is a really, really important central experience to their existence.
Mm-hmm.
And to be excluded deliberately from something like that. Well, I mean, if you want to just catalog what a sin really is, that goes way up the ladder for me.
Up the ladder. Mm-hmm. That's up the flagpole for me too, because it's like, come on.
Just a matter of hurting people to be hurting people. And if anybody's going to go for a swim in the eternal lake of fire,
it's those people.
It ought to be people that run around just deliberately making people miserable.
Mm-hmm. Just because you can. Just because you can. Just making people miserable for the sake of making people miserable. Because you have the power to do so. But see, I refuse to give people, again, with that noble Negro stuff, I refuse to give people that power over me any longer. Okay? Because when I'm at that point in my life where I tell people all day long, I'm old enough and black enough not to give a fuck about what people say or think of me. I've got over that a long time ago, because my little hurt feelings is not going to, and if you say something about me, I'm going to do like my friend used to say, they'll get over it once the swelling goes down, right? And so once my heart heals and the bruises, you know, go away and the little bumps and, you know, they got Novocaine, lidocaine or whatever I could put on a Band-Aid, and I keep it moving. Because I'm like, you know what? I'm tired. Because, like, I went to Antioch University today to meet with a admissions counselor, and I will be starting back to school in July to finally finish my bachelor's and go on to and get my master's in clinical psychology. And so the counselor just so happens was black. And so I went to one of the, I guess, open houses, or, you know, and me being me, and I'm looking over the curriculum, which is an amazing curriculum. And again, another one of these supposedly progressive places. And I'm like, so, you know, you got queer studies, you got this studies. Where's the women's studies and where's the ethnic studies? I didn't even say black studies. I just said ethnic studies. Because you, again.
And?
Well, you know, and see, this is what I, you know, what I've ascertained is that the way Antioch is set up is that you can basically make your own curriculum through independent studies and prior learning, which is what I'm going to do. But I'm not going to stop until there are actual women's studies courses and black studies courses. Because, again, you cannot tell me that you're progressive and inclusive and you're not including me. I'm black, I'm a woman, and now I'm gay. Oh, and then also forget about the disability part. So when you talk about inclusive, who are you including?
Everybody except those that they prefer to exclude.
Right. And so, again, you know, I'm going back to my favorite Langston Houston poem, you know, about you've taken my blues and gone. You know, you've taken my blues and put them up in the operas and on Broadway and on this and that, and you're stealing my story and making it your own. You know, everybody wants to sing my blues, but nobody wants to live. And, of course, I'm paraphrasing the poem. But what he says at the end of the poem, well, what about me? Who's going to sing about me? Who's going to write about me? And then he's like, he ends it, well, I guess it'll have to be me. So when people like us, you know, the Horn family, when we sit and poor us and pitiful, you know, well, what can we do? Then we have to get out there and tell our stories. And like with Tim in L.A., talk, you know, how we did the Occupy, you know,
yeah.
talk about the Occupy movement. And all these little things that are you know, are finally taking root. And people are slowly beginning to listen. And the hard-headed people with the heads as hard as coconuts, they're finally starting to crack open. And seeing, I'm praying, what is happening in this country. And I'm proud of the fact that our president, we have a black president. Yes, I'm proud of that, but I'm not so proud of him. Because, you know, he played the noble Negro trying to get along. Let's, you know, why can't we all get along and whatnot and so forth. They don't want to get along with you, boo. They don't. They don't. You know, I
no.
like.
No, and you know, bless his heart, President Not Sure, in his sit-down with Bill O'Reilly, put one right across his bow. Did you catch that? No, you were running around.
But I missed. Yeah, I was running around. So tell me what that was about.
So O'Reilly asks him the obligatory Benghazi question.
Still?
Oh, yeah. And says, you know, do you realize that people think you're not being candid about what happened in Benghazi? And President Not Sure said, yes, Bill, I do. And I realize that some people think that because your TV station is out here telling them to believe that, even though it's not true. Yeah, it had a real element of why don't you eat feces and bark at the moon, Bill O'Reilly, about it.
Get ahead. Go ahead on, Barry. Yeah, I called him Barry.
Yeah, I know.
You know, but it's just the thing. It's like, do you know how much I want? I remember, you know, a while ago, John Boehner, I'm sorry, Boehner, did an interview, you know, and basically dissed the president about, I guess they had a meeting, and, you know, this is back when he was trying to quit smoking. And Boehner's sitting there, you know, smoking his cigar and drinking his wine and, you know, basically like, ha-ha, you're trying to stop smoking. I'm just going to sit here out of utter disrespect and smoke my cigar and drink my wine while, you know, and eat my red, ruby red steak. And it's just the level of disrespect. See, I don't care who you voted for.
Well, see, that's what that whole Donald Trump necktie thing is. That was, you know, that was code. That was code for he's being uppity again.
He's being uppity again. How dare he?
And, you know, I sat there and I watched the State of the Union address, and we all understand that I have these occasional moments of hope, absolute 200-proof shallowness. Mm-hmm. And at one point, they cut to a camera shot of Michelle. And I was looking, Ferg was sitting here with me, and I just looked at him and I said, that woman is just straight up beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Have we ever had a woman that beautiful?
Nope.
As first lady, you know, because they said Dolly Madison was a real looker.
Well, we don't have any pictures.
So. No, that's before the daguerreotype and the tintype came along.
Mm-hmm.
But then to see the tawdry, crappy tweets, you know, after the State of the Union.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, God, please, you know, save me, Jesus, you know.
And you go...
And here's how my sad, shallow little brain works. I was looking at Michelle Obama, and I had memory things going on with little snapshot flashes of Pat Nixon and Betty Ford.
Betty Ford or Barbara Bush.
Or, oh, God. The Quaker Oats man on meth, Barbara Bush, or Nancy Reagan. And I just went, just to sit there and flash on the amount of hatred that there are that people have for her and for the children.
Mm-hmm. who are beautiful.
There are moments when this country just seems like it's beyond help.
Yeah, and this is when you hear about, you know, how they, you know, so upset because, you know, she was walking around sleeveless. No first lady has. I mean, because none of them had the arms to go sleeveless, bitches. Quit hating. You know, it's like.
Put on a necktie and get some sleeves for that woman of yours.
In her place. You know, you uppity Negroes, you. How dare you? And it's just like I said. George Bush was a moron, okay? The man was a mouth breather, okay? Can barely spell his name, idiot. If there was only...
Around here, Tracy, we spell that I-D-J-I-T, idiot.
Idiot, exactly. Fortunately for him, there was only four letters in his name, last name, okay? And they called, you know, they probably just said GW just to keep the man from it being confused. So, will you go, but with all that said, I still respected the office of president. I didn't respect the man because he was like an idiot. He didn't deserve my respect because he didn't give a flying fifthly flop about me or anybody that looked like me. You can evidence by what the blundering called Katrina. So, you know, whatever on him, but I still respected the fact that he was the president of the United States. Okay? If I ever had the displeasure, and yes, I said displeasure, of meeting the man, I wouldn't talk down to him. I would just say, thank you, Mr. President, or what have you, and keep it moving. Nice to meet you. Whatever. But these people are just, when Boehner sits and when they're showing him, John Boehner looked like he had a rod so far up his ass and was made to eat.
Well, let's bear one thing in mind, Tracy. Living well is said to be the best revenge, and sometimes mm-hmm. just living is. And if mm-hmm. you were to contact the folks out at Harrah's in Vegas, They'd probably give you better odds on, well, I mean, Barack Obama outliving John Boehner.
Oh, yeah.
In which mm-hmm. case, living is the best revenge. Hey, Tracy, I need to run now. I want to make sure that I get to all the blinking lights.
Oh, yeah, because I...
But we've been having a delightful conversation, and I look forward to the next one.
Yeah, because like I said, I sit back and I listen to the show, and I'm like, okay, and you know.
Well, and it all kind of wells up and gathers together, and you gotta, yeah.
You know, and I tried that because I know once we get to talking, we talk, and then we look at the time. Oh shit, other people might want to talk, and so that's why I keep my mouth shut and listen. But today I just, oh my god.
I know.
I had to call.
I know. So, you know, when the spirit moves you, you gotta, yeah.
And I'm still trying to understand what the hell happened to the Super Bowl yesterday because I was not expecting
just let it be a lesson. Let it be a lesson to all executive vice presidents of football teams that you should not say a couple of hours before the game, I don't believe in safety nets. Because John Elway,
exactly.
Well, you know, like I said, I think Peyton Manning injured himself watching that first snap fly past his head, you know, just
well,
a little whiplash or
say.
Something.
Well, this is one of those things, and I'm going to go on this note. As far as the NFL is concerned, and I want you to discuss this if you felt like it. Why the fuck are they a nonprofit organization?
Oh, good God, yes. I think they should be. First of all, I think the first thing that needs to happen to the NFL is the NFL needs to be compelled to eliminate its rule that prevents community ownership of teams.
Yes.
They need.
You're supposed to do what's up for the community.
Well, right. I mean, the green. That's the Green Bay rule. You know, the Green Bay Packers are owned by the community, and because of that, the NFL passed a rule that said nobody else can be. Well, by God, if a community. You reckon you could? I mean, and I'm not asking this sarcastically. You reckon a community group could be pulled together in L.A. to get an NFL franchise?
I think so.
Last I checked, L.A. feels kind of left out not being in the NFL mix.
Mm-hmm. All the time.
I mean, when Charlotte, North Carolina has an NFL franchise and L.A. doesn't.
Does not? Come on, bruh.
Yeah. I mean, L.A.'s got LA's got hockey, but not football. Excuse me?
Two baseball teams, two basketball teams, and not one damn football team?
Yeah.
And you talk about giving jobs to people? I'm just saying. So anyway, you have a wonderful...
Oh, and by the way, Devin just sent a note along before you go. He said, Mrs. Obama is a very strong woman. One day the booger eaters will push her too far, and she'll go all predator on their asses and rip their spines out one-handedly.
Well, that, or she'll run for office. Revenge.
It is a dish that is best served cold.
Yeah, but I think, could you imagine the hoopla if she ran for office? I'm sorry, that was the evil.
Oh, no. Hillary Hayden wouldn't have anything on that.
No.
Tracy, have yourself a lovely evening. Thank you so much for calling. You take care.
Always.
All right. Bye now.
Bye.
Tracy, the lady cab driver, calling from Los Angeles. Going right back to the phones in a second, just to update you on fundraising for the evening. Thank you very much to Sal. Sal is there day in, day out, and we so appreciate Sal leading the way practically every evening. Thank you, Sal. So hopefully Sal can find some folks who will stand with him. Because remember, Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge is on the table this evening. If we raise the $150 we need to raise in a night, then Shirley will happily match that. So at this point, we are $145 away from meeting Shirley's $150 Wisconsin Challenge. PayPal or the traditional mail service works just fine either way. By the way, going back to my conversation with Tracy about SNAP benefits, SNAP is administered, Mark tells us, by J.P. Morgan out of Florida. And they also, J.P. Morgan also administers the death benefits for dead soldiers. Thank God there's no corporate welfare, right? Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening to you, sir.
Hey, Bill, how are you?
No, I'm doing relatively well. You got me cranked in the beginning of the conversation, as usual, when you spoke about Coke. I had the first one out of a machine when I was probably 11 or 12.
Wow.
It's been in 54, 55. And it came out in a funny-shaped bottle. It was a little smaller than what they're serving now. And let me tell you, that stuff took a bite out of your throat.
Yeah, was that the 6.5-ounce bottle?
Yep. Yes, sir. And it really had a distinct bite to it that was strong and whatever. Then the other thing, being a Clevelander, watching Denver get their asses chewed up didn't bother me in the least. Because if you're old enough to remember the times when the...
And I am.
Yes, they hurt us bad. And
the drive.
Well, I remember the days when the NFL was the only thing that existed. There was no AH, you know, or AH, AAF, AH hockey. Yeah, it was the American Hockey League, a little different. And they played here on 64. The Browns played Baltimore and ate them for lunch, like 24 to nothing or 27 to 7 or something like that. Because Brown, before he got fired, he picked up a quarterback named Frank Ryan, who could throw the damn thing. And, of course, he had a running back named Jim Brown, who could charge through a burning building and come out unscathed, you know. So I had the pleasure of watching. I had the pleasure of watching that guy from the first year he was here in 57. Yeah, 57. I still don't know how Brown swung that one. But, hell, they were back in the title game in 57 after being the first time since they joined the league in 50 that they hadn't played for the title. It's an amazing record, and I don't know if anybody knows about it or talks about it even. Because to keep winning the Eastern Division every damn year up till 1956 and then coming back in 57, and then they lost it in 58 when they had to play the Giants. The Giants beat them, which tied the two teams, and then they had another game. They had like a playoff game then in the Eastern Division, and the Giants won that. And that was the Baltimore-New York Giants game that was so
Yeah, the
famous.
Classic.
Yeah, yeah. So I've been following that sport for a long time, and as I said, I don't have a TV set. The fellas didn't bring my television, which I don't know why. It's too old. Well, hell, it still functions, you know. So, hell, I'm too old and I'm still functioning to some degree. But yeah, you had it. You were on that. I mean, this whole deal with this Super Bowl is it's too much, Bob. As much as I've been following football since age 11, it's too much for me. Because everybody's chiming in on it, local sports talk, et cetera, you know. They're just hammering you. The West Coast team is their mothers, man.
I mean, early on, it seemed like, I looked at Ferg and I said, you know, if this was a boxing match, the ref would be walking into the middle of the ring waving his arms.
Yeah, throwing in that towel. Well,
yeah,
TKO
TKO in round two.
In 54, the Browns played the Detroit Lions, and they beat them 56-10. Mr. Graham threw for three touchdowns and ran for three touchdowns, and he decided to hang it up that year. And then he came back the next year, and the Browns played L.A. and beat them 38-14. Well, anyway, you talk about a powerhouse. And at age five, I stood on the street, and my mother, who was a big baseball fan, I watched the World Series team parade past. And, you know, interesting times.
Well, you know, I admit to having moments of shallowness. I'm neither a Broncos nor a Seahawks fan.
No.
I mean, I'm just kind of not geographically inclined toward either
you're
one.
You're a Pittsburgh man, aren't you?
Yeah. This was not the year to be a Steelers fan.
Well, you're scraping me a little there.
I understand. No, I know. Me and my buddy Bo go round and round. You like who? But you know, I spent years living with a bunch of guys from Pittsburgh, and I mean, I tried mightily to resist, but I eventually just got pulled into the vortex.
Well,
I made my decision about who I was rooting for, on nothing but pure politics.
What I like was about the Steelers was you ever see their record before Chuck Knoll was coach?
Oh, well, and most of the time when Chuck Knoll was coach, they were awful.
No, they went 1-13, but they started winning after that. With Joe Green and a few other guys on defense, and what the hell was the quarterback's name?
Oh, Terry Bradshaw.
Yeah, Bradshaw, and of course, Fuqua and Franco Harris, that was a team. Those were strong teams. And Noel, of course, Noel had a special. I don't know if you know what he did with the Browns for years.
No.
He played linebacker for a while, then he got injured in the game against L.A., and a buddy of mine's uncle had to go in and play linebacker, got him Sam Palumbo. But to make a long story short, Brown switched him to guard. And the thing about Paul was that he sent every freaking play in. You know, when he had Graham playing quarterback, he was still running plays in from the sideline.
There was a running joke in Pittsburgh during the heyday. You know, the Terry Bradshaw, Steel Curtain years. That Chuck Knoll would send the play in by one of the receivers.
Yeah, he'd use the receivers. Yeah,
and that. In turn, a receiver would look at Terry Bradshaw and say, whatever that was, go deep, I'll be open.
Yeah, well, that's a good way to handle it, too. Because the game, when I moved from Lake County, I found a box full of old pro football magazines dating back to 56.
Oh, man.
Yeah, cover is ripped off, and I could sit there in 57 and tell you the starting backfield. And I remember when the Cardinals played in Chicago.
Yep.
And they played a game in 51 or 2, the Browns played the Chicago Bears. And you know what Halas was like.
Yeah.
Another dictator. And they set a record for penalties. I one of the guys in the Cleveland Plain Dealer covered that game in a story, and it was like, I don't believe this. The number of personal fouls looked like a professional wrestling match. It was just out of control. But getting to the things of real life, the political situation and such, we know what that's like, Bob. It's as I said, me, I'm having a few problems. The guys that took care of me and looked after me did such a good job, but, well, the best potato peeler I ever have disappeared, and some other little accoutrements. Oh, the IBEC, if you know what an IBEC is. I think I told you what they are. They're little tin pots with a long handle that you put espresso.
Oh, yeah.
In,
yeah.
And you bring it to a boil, and you pour a demi-tasse of... of the old hippie coffee.
It's in a box. It's in a box that hasn't found its. You haven't found yet.
Nah. Well, it hasn't turned. He did throw out a lot of stuff because I don't know whether. And I'm having a slight problem where one of the guys thinks that I've slipped a notch or two, and maybe I have to some degree. But we have a Horn family member who has been delightfully helpful to me, and his wife makes the best damn soup I've ever had in my life. Because this computer I'm using is an old Dell. It's so damn old, you hit the right button, you get smoke signals, you know. It's not exactly, because I'm going to have to get another one. Colin.
It's so old, it's not operating on ones and zeros, just zeros.
Yeah. Well, I took a course in data processing for a while, and I got one lesson from it. It's not for you. Stay away from it. You should have gone and got at least a bachelor's in history and taught high school, you know.
You'd have been hell on wheels.
That would have been the thing, yeah. Although I had a world history teacher in a Catholic high school call me an occupational hazard, and I still haven't figured that guy out. Didn't like him much.
Well, he didn't figure you out either. That's the problem.
No, that was the whole thing. But it's the games were, I mean, it, you know, I still love the game. One of the things that was fixed up for me is I can get a radio station on a computer out of Detroit, and they play the Wings. And sometimes for a night shirt, a shirt to sleep in, you know, like a sweatshirt, I use a Detroit Red Wings shirt that I bought at the old Maple Leaf Gardens in Toronto so many years ago. Well, you know, certain things have a certain appeal because when I followed hockey, there was only six teams in the big league, and we had a high minor league team.
Let's see, Toronto, Montreal, Boston,
New York,
Detroit, Chicago.
That was it.
Wow.
For years and years and years. I don't, you know, I still follow it as close as I can because, for instance, we had a World Hockey Association team for a couple of years, and one year my first wife and I went to 30 out of 37 games. Yeah, I do like it. Yeah, no doubt about it. But as I say, with professional football, I don't know. It's the whole broadcasting angle, Bob. It gets so old.
Oh, and just the gratuitous, desperate to fill time.
Yeah.
BS pageantry of it.
Well, yeah, the halftime show was rather interesting yesterday, wasn't it? From what I've heard.
Yeah, I was watching Bruno Mars, and I was thinking, he seemed rather reminiscent of James Brown.
Yeah, somewhat.
Although there was something about the gold lamé jackets that was also reminiscent of the Beatles.
Well,
and the bouffant hair just screamed Little Richard.
Well, there was a rock and roll singer who was platinum blonde, white, you know, a white singer, and I forget Eddie. No, it wasn't Cochran.
I can't remember the guy's name, but he was bigger for a while. He had that big high hair, and he was as Caucasian as you get, you know, so nothing new there. And, of course, my feelings are hurt because Paul Butterfield was not named to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, you know. Although his band had such an influence, the West Coast Latino guitar player, what the hell is his name? That's the thing that's striking me funny is remembering names. Oh, God. He did a couple of songs that were big. He was Latin, I know, and you know, and he was out of the West Coast and strong, very strong. And he was influenced heavily by Michael Bloomfield in what he said in print a few times. Because that band never did get the... They played at the 65 Ann Arbor Blues Festival. And the guy that introduced them said, here's a bunch of white guys who say they can play blues. Well, the drummer and the bass player were black. You know, they were African-American guys who had played with Wolf and a few other guys, Muddy and such, in Chicago. And here's this host, who was a good guy. He did a lot of field recordings, the host of this show. But that was, you know, he had to come out with that kind of a remark. Because the next day when Dylan played electric, Butterfield's band backed him. That's who played behind him that day.
Really?
Yep. Yeah, I know too damn much about it. I saw those guys, and they came to Cleveland to a college, and I caught that whole act, and it was October of 65. And the first LP I bought, I think, was July of 65. So I'm standing there, and I was talking to Bloomfield, because he talked to anybody. And my teeth were hanging out listening to Butterfield blow me away. Because that was the guy that basically I learned to play from, you know. And the old guys, too, of course, Little Walter and such. But I don't have that. I have more of that hard-edged sound to what I do. But I'll let you go. But, the whole football thing goes back so far. I mean, it's the old story with me, Bob. Most of this stuff goes back. It's like I was rereading David Halberstam's Korean War, and he devotes two chapters to...
By the way, I have to ask, was it Carlos Santana you were thinking of?
Yes, sir.
Okay, well...
Hold it in.
Jeremy in Vermont.
Yeah, he's right on the money. That's who it was, yeah. Carlos was heavily influenced by... Bloomfield and Paul both ended up croaking themselves with heroin. But that's what happens. Bloomfield was 21 and Paul was 22 when their first LP came out. And native Chicagoans who had the ability to go down to the west side or the south side and sit there and listen to, you know, the greats. But you go back far enough to the days of a guy named King Oliver, a trumpet player from New Orleans. He's the guy that he brought up a young man from New Orleans named Louis Armstrong to play with King's band. And if you looked in the corners, one of the guys you'd see up there, a little young kid sneaking in to hear these guys, was a clarinet player named Benjamin Goodman. So there's a long transition in this music, and I'm sure some of these young guys playing bluegrass can sit down and rattle off the names of everybody they ever heard that they loved, because that's just the way it goes. Anyway, I'll let you go. You hang in there.
Bill, you have yourself a real good evening.
Good night.
All right, take care. Bye now. Our buddy Bill, Mr. Stress, calling from Cleveland. And onward. Hey,
hi,
welcome
Bob.
To the program. Hello?
Bob, it's Larry.
Hey, Larry, how are you?
Hello. I wanted to help Mr. Stress. I just tuned in after I was off for about an hour or so. I listened to the first part of your program, which was very good, talking about the guy from Nestle who made that.
Peter Brabick.
All that. Okay, I think that the Latino guitarist that Mr. Stress was talking about was probably Carlos Santana.
Yeah, he confirmed that.
And I think that the white, the guy with the white bouffant, it was either Wayne Cochran, maybe, or maybe Ron Hawkins, but don't hold me to those. Either Ronnie Hawkins, who was from Arkansas, who moved up to Canada, and then he had that the second band that backed Dylan, called The Band with Robbie Robertson. That might be the answer, and the other answer might be Wayne Cochran, and who was with Wayne Cochran and the CC Riders. in any case, I was listening to Dr. Bill, and it seemed to me that what he was talking about is that George Will was making an attack against the core curriculum because he just doesn't want to see any reform of the the education system. It just wants to attack Obama. And and Dr. Bill was saying that he thought that the states ought to be able to improve upon or ought to be able to have some more flexibility. It wasn't that he wanted to necessarily get rid of the core standards in education, but that he wanted to have the states be able to challenge the rigidity of the test taking regime or No Child Left Behind or what they call Race at the Top. I guess I'm understanding it. I'm not sure, but I was listening today.
I think that encompasses a lot of it. The other part where George Will is concerned, you know, being a right wing Republican, Larry, the only reform he wants to make to the educational system is to eliminate it.
Okay.
Because we must remember that right wingers, at their most essential level, public education is just more socialism.
That's why these
horses rear ends of right-wing radio so often refer to public schools now as government schools.
Yeah, well, George Weldon knows better than that. I think he was a professor at one time. They know better. You were talking about the commercials during the Super Bowl, and I only caught the last half. I couldn't believe when I went on to MSN last night and put it on, and it was 22-0 Seattle, and that Seattle dominated that game. Although I do know that, you know, that both teams really tried hard, and it's just a question of what day they happen to be playing on.
Oh, I don't think so. I think you could play that game 10 times, and Seattle probably wins 9 of them.
Okay.
I mean, they were just that much better. There was one little signature moment, and it was in the first half, when Denver was on offense, and they got a penalty for tripping. And then, you know, as they're wont to do, they cut back, they went back and showed the rerun. And what you saw was this big old Denver offensive lineman who was doing all he could to hold off his block.
Uh-huh.
And a Seahawks player is just getting ready to blow past him and maybe clean Peyton Manning's clock. And so this big old offensive lineman sticks his leg out at a 90-degree angle to the rest of his body to trip the guy going by. I mean, it was unmissable. The ref could not have not made that call.
Yeah.
And in that moment, I sort of just realized these guys know that they are out of their depth. I mean, it was the Seattle defense was so fast. Denver looked like it was standing still.
Yeah. Well. Anyway, Denver shouldn't have really gotten that 8 points at the end of the third quarter because there was that penalty against number 41 of Seattle that really helped them out. In any case, you were talking about the advertisements, and the advertisement that I saw that I really liked, it wasn't the Dober Wawa, that turned me off a little bit, or turned me off a lot, but the one, it was the Budweiser commercial. Now, I don't
know. Oh, with the puppy and the horse?
Yeah, I don't drink beer, so I don't know what kind of connection you were supposed to make between a puppy and a horse, except that they were buds, and that somehow connects to Budweiser.
Right. Well, you got it. You got it.
I don't need to have the beer part tagged on to know that I like that commercial. I thought that was a really cool commercial. The rhythm section of Paul Butterfield, the original rhythm section, I think, was Jerome Arnold playing bass and Sam Lay playing drums. I think that those were the two that Mr. Stress was talking about. Then they had, Bloomfield and, Bloomfield and Elvin Bishop and Paul Butterfield that rounded out that first band. And then they went from doing straight blues on the first couple albums into doing blues with horns. And then Electric Flag developed out of that. And the other band that you may or may not remember that influenced all those horn bands at the beginning was another band out of Chicago that was a beat band that called the Buckinghams that did Kind of a Dragon, Don't You Care, and those songs.
Yeah, I'd forgotten about them. Yep.
Those influenced Al Cooper. Surprising that that particular band would influence the blues guys. But so in any case, as far as the commercials are concerned, I think you were trying to point out, if I'm not correct, I caught part of it because I was in the middle of my afternoon routine. You were talking about how the commercials reflect values and what kinds of values and what kinds of beliefs that the advertisers in the advertising business play on in terms to be able to sell their products. Was there an ad there that talked about singing the America the Beautiful in different languages? Something in your monologue about that.
Yeah. The hissy was just about 100%, 110% from the right wing. They just lost their tiny freaking minds.
Oh, well, I don't get it, but I don't live there.
Because, how dare somebody sing America the Beautiful in something besides American?
Well, Bob Dylan used to sing, don't criticize what you can't understand. Maybe if I...
Yeah, and Bob Dylan shows up in a Chrysler ad, by the way. Did you catch that? Bob Dylan showed up in a Chrysler ad.
Did he really?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Okay, then, I'm going to let you go because you've got about 10 minutes, and I want to let somebody else get a chance to talk, okay?
All right. Thanks, Larry. Have a good evening. Take care.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye now. Larry calling from the Bay Area. The oxymoron, Flush Limbaugh, couldn't get away without taking a swipe at it. I thought maybe the Republican leadership was behind the Coke commercial. That's what I thought when I saw it. I said, whoa, who got hold of this advertising campaign? The Republican leadership's got to be doing this. Really? Flush? Chew another one up for the refreshing burst of flavor, why don't you, buddy? If you think this is the best way, if you're convinced that the best way to sell Coca-Cola to Americans is to sing America the Beautiful in multiple languages, then why don't you produce the product with labels printed in 10 different languages? Is that the way to sell Coca-Cola? Dumbass. Coca-Cola is printed in many different languages and in even different alphabets in different places. Really? God, these people are so unutterably stupid. Hey. By the way, thank you very much to Tracy. She just kicked in on Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge. So between Tracy and Sal, we now have only $120 to go to meet Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge, and that will be most helpful. So thank you, Tracy, and thank you, Sal. It being Moran Monday and everything, and I didn't get around to the John Elway clip, and I guess we'll just have to live with that. Some of us are probably the better for it, having already seen it once. What a jackass. There is one thing out there that I really wanted to make sure we got to. And that is a little something regarding the Keystone XL pipeline. Kind of a
kind of a nasty bit of revelation. And not so much the Keystone XL pipeline, but the tar sands themselves. It appears that what we thought the impacts of the tar sands are, aren't. They are much, much worse. Pulling up the story now. It turns out that estimates of the environmental damage from the Keystone XL pipeline is, orders of magnitude worse than what we thought. And there are, in fact, I got a note from Kath in Canada saying that she would not be listening to the program tonight because specifically of her attendance at a vigil, and there were thousands of vigils all over the country this evening of people demanding that Barack Obama simply reject outright the Keystone XL pipeline and its vile the reason it would exist, you know, the damnable tar sands that would go to Houston to be refined and then sent on to China and not have a damn thing to do with any of our fuel prices or availability of fuel. Given time, we'll hit that tomorrow evening for Titanic Tuesday. Thanks, everybody, for all your participation this evening. Lovely conversations. A delightful Moran Monday, one I hope was had by one and all. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky and Texas Betsy in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thank you to John Fox. Thank you to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks always go out to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ACHEACT.org, ACHEACT.org. That's where you go if you want to learn about how we can end the nightmare that has been described as Appalachia's agony, mountaintop removal. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.